From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Gulhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump has returned from his high-level summit in Helsinki, Finland, with Russia's Vladimir Putin to face harsh calls from both major parties at home. At the summit, Trump publicly denied U.S. intelligence agencies' findings of Russian attempts to influence the 2016 election and claimed that he believed Mr. Putin instead, who's denied any wrongdoing. Democrats were, of course, up in arms, but this time Republican lawmakers also joined in with choruses of disapproval. Some commentators have even begun to use the word treason to describe Trump's actions. What is not getting much attention are substantive issues, such as U.S.-Russia relations and the ongoing Syria war. On Monday, as Trump was apparently making progress toward ending the war in his talks with Putin, Russia was bombing civilian targets in Syria. We turn to Rahul Mahajan, the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches sociology at the University of Wisconsin's River Falls, and he is the U.S. Foreign Policy and Empire Correspondent for our program. Welcome back to the show, Rahul.
Great to be with you, Sonali.
First, what do you make of the massive media attention and the reactions from members of Congress and commentators, late-night talk show hosts, about Trump's performance alongside Putin on Monday?
Well, you know, I mean, it was really strikingly open. He made a point of not criticizing Russia for anything. In fact, Putin was the one who pointed out that, at least in theory, Trump is actually opposed to Russia's annexation of Crimea. Trump never said any words about that. He went out of his way to blame the United States, and not in the way that, a thoughtful analyst of the many crimes and mistakes of the United States with regard to Russia might do, because of course he doesn't know a single thing about any of those things. If it had been Bill Clinton saying, you know, in retrospect, I realized that everything we did once the Soviet Union fell was almost designed to lead to this state of enmity, that would be one thing. But Trump is just saying it because he really thinks that the only thing important with regard to American democracy is the legitimacy of his election.
So certainly Russia is not some innocent nation here, but of course the U.S. has encouraged enmity, as you've said. It has surrounded Russia geographically. That doesn't let Russia off the hook. What would you have liked to have seen? I mean, when Obama was president, even if he acted more stately and statesmanlike, he continued the antagonistic posturing from the U.S. to Russia, right?
Well, the United States has meddled in the political affairs of lots of countries. At times, it did it with very primitive operations. So if you look at the way the United States actually got the coups in Iran in 1953 or in Guatemala in 1954 accomplished, it was because these were political systems that, as it turned out, were weak and easily, if you want to use computer parlance, easily hackable democratic systems. In Iran, this was true despite the fact that it had a 50-year experience with parliamentary democracy at the time. They were weak, easily hackable systems. Now it's the United States democracy that is among the weakest and most easily hackable in the world. And Russia, among others, has done it. So has the right wing. They have hacked it, of course, to a far greater degree than Putin could ever have managed.
The right wing here in the U.S.?
Yes, correct. The American right wing obviously with the election of Trump, has made a major assault on the basic institutional structures of democracy that go well beyond elections, whereas Russia's hacking is pretty much confined two elections, in particular the 2016. As you said, Obama, knew of what was going on and privately told Putin to knock it off. I don't know how he could have imagined that Putin would take that seriously when there was, so conspicuously a lack of any attempt to make it public. Trump is taking an even worse tack, which is denying that it even happened, but it is a real important issue. And of course, it's more important that the American right wing is doing it, but obviously there are lots of people across the political spectrum who think it's particularly important when a foreign power is doing this to your political system.
So let's also talk about the reactions here at home and the calls for that that claim Trump has committed treason by not standing up for U.S. national interests on a global scale. Some of this seems to me to be not very helpful. Former CIA director John Brennan called it, said that Trump was Trump's actions were treasonous, and late night hosts Stephen Colbert and others have used the word treason. It seems as though that's a bit of a nationalistic reaction to what happened on Monday. What do you think?
I really don't like the promiscuous use of the term treason. The left has been using it a lot, even for the Bush administration, and certainly now. I mean, when the Bush administration decides to go to war in Iraq because they think America is really powerful and can wave itself around in the world and crush all opposition, and it backfires and harms America, that's not the same as they're deliberately trying to harm the United States hegemony in the Middle East. It is an accidental result of their own hubris, stupidity, and complete lack of any kind of moral judgment. That's not treason. To me, I mean, I'm no legal expert, but it seems to me that the Constitution pretty narrowly defines treason as helping an enemy in a time of war deliberately. And I don't think that that's even applicable here. I'm not a fan of the term. I think it probably naturally appears as extreme hyperbole to the right and feeds into the idea that both sides just throw around verbiage that's completely inappropriate.
So essentially, the Constitution. Let's look at it. The Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution says that it defines treason as specific acts, namely levying war against the United States or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. So in the midst of everything, the brouhaha over what Trump has been saying, were other very important issues that probably should have come up, or maybe they came up and weren't discussed, or maybe didn't come up at all. You alluded to one of them, which was Russia's annexation of Crimea, which has generally been lambasted by both parties. But what did Trump say or not say on this issue?
Trump didn't say anything. When a journalist brought up the question, it was Putin who said, look, Trump hasn't changed his opinion. He's still against it, which is pretty meaningless because Trump himself can't keep any of his opinions straight for any two successive utterances. So I think that what it means in practice is that Trump is not treating this as a live issue. So it's a done deal, and that's that.
Right. The other perhaps most important issue, well, one of two very important issues that I'd like to discuss with you that aren't getting much media coverage, is the issue of the Syria war. Now, we know that Russia has been essentially backing the Assad regime in Syria. It's made no secret of this. It's Bashar al-Assad's strongest ally and is literally actively dropping bombs alongside Syrian government planes, targeting rebels, targeting even civilian targets, and over the last several weeks has been deliberately targeting civilians. And even on Monday itself, there was news of that happening. What, as far as you know, sort of progress was made on the Syria war between the U.S. and Russia on Monday?
Nothing. I mean, there's virtually no mention. When it comes up in the actual press conference, What do we hear? the US loves Israel, Russia loves Israel, we love each other, we're cooperating the hell out of the situation, whatever, in whatever kind of broken language Trump actually sounded.
And actually, let's just play that. Let's play what Trump said at the press conference before we turn back to you, Rahul, for a little more in-depth analysis. This is Trump responding to a question. He discusses Israel and Syria.
We've worked with Israel long and hard for many years, many decades. I think we've never has anyone, any country been closer than we are. President Putin also is helping Israel, and we both spoke with Bibi Netanyahu, and they would like to do certain things with respect to Syria, having to do with the safety of Israel. So in that respect, we absolutely would like to work in order to help Israel, and Israel will be working with us. So both countries would work jointly. And I think that when you look at all of the progress that's been made in certain sections with the eradication of ISIS, we're about 98%, 99% there, and other things that have taken place that we've done, and that, frankly, Russia has helped us with in certain respects. But I think that working with Israel is a great thing, and creating safety for Israel is something that both President Putin and I would like to see very much.
And that is President Donald Trump at the Helsinki summit on Monday, speaking alongside Vladimir Putin, answering a question from a reporter. Rahul, essentially everything he said around the Syria war was framed within Israel's safety. We need to deal with Syria for Israel's safety. He also mentioned that ISIS has been 98% to 99% eradicated. That seems pretty sad that such a devastating war that has cost so much and so many lives has now been reduced to whether or not it's about Israel's safety.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, obviously Trump has had these weird moments where Ivanka showed him some pictures of kids who had been gruesomely killed in a chemical attack, and he fired off some missiles for no apparent reason, and then went back to mostly Obama-esque strategy on Syria. But, you know, he's made it abundantly clear that he doesn't give a damn about the fate of Syrians or most other people in countries that he terms, well, I guess I can't say that on your air, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, S-hole, let's just say that.
Yes, so he doesn't care. And of course, functionally, the elites, the people who are regularly part of the public discourse in the United States, also don't care about the fate of Syrians, which is sad because you know, the war is not over. I think it's over in terms of the fact that there's no plausible way to beat Assad, but there are serious questions, for example, of Rojava, the Kurdish liberated areas. They are right now secure only because of cooperation with the United States. If the United States explicitly abandons Rojava, then a number of things could happen. The Assad regime could move in and take it over. Turkey could push in, which would push the YPD even more firmly into the arms of the Assad regime than they have already been. Neither one of those is a good result for the people of that region. There is still ongoing regime fighting against insurgents. There's got to be a less bloody way to resolve that if the United States were to throw some diplomatic weight around, but it doesn't care and it's not part of their considerations, so it's not likely to happen. There are still, you know, lives to be saved, what to speak of the question of reconstructing Syria with or without Assad.
There have been shelters of Syrian refugees, internally displaced refugees, that have been bombed in recent weeks. Among those responsible is the Russian government that's directly bombing as well. Of course, none of that has been discussed by the media. Now, one of the things that came up in a New York Times article about American-Russian relations in Syria is the apparent fact that American and Russian generals are meeting regularly to discuss how to sort of head off potential conflicts, as it was put, between their two militaries in Syria. So as far, are you aware of this? Have you heard? I have not heard about the fact that the U.S. and Russia are sort of openly coordinating so that they don't get in each other's way.
Look, there's been a lot of stuff over the past few years about information sharing. I don't recall anything being quite this specific about the modality of information sharing. It's an unfortunate situation, but I don't know if both those militaries are going to be operating there and they don't want to inadvertently set off World War III. It is unfortunately necessary. But what it means in practice, of course, especially given the fact that the Russians have clearly shown a much firmer strategic sense of what they're doing in Syria than the Americans, what it means in practice is that whoever is allying with or depending on the support of the Americans is probably constantly getting their information sold out or given away and being put in a precarious position.
So apparently U.S. and Russian generals met on June 8th in Helsinki, a month before Trump and Putin met. What about Iran? As far as you know, did the U.S.-Iran nuclear deal that Trump has eviscerated come up? Also, given that Iran has supported and is supporting Assad in Syria.
You know, again, we have so little concrete detail. I mean, this is why Chuck Schumer wants to get Mike Pompeo in for congressional testimony, because we have so little detail about what they talked about. I mean, for all you know, they spent a lot of time talking about Trump's commercial ventures. It's very difficult to say. With regard to the Iran deal, we're in a complete limbo. It does seem to be clear that the Europeans are not going along with the United States and are trying to keep the deal alive, but the entire deal is predicated on an economic opening that is going to help Iran get out of its current woes. And once the sanctions snap back fully, it's not at all clear if that will continue. It's also not clear whether the Trump administration has any kind of plan for that. They seem to think that, I don't know what, they can posture the way they did with North Korea, come up with a completely empty photo op the way they did with North Korea, and then claim the problem is solved. It's hard to know.
And as far as you know, does Russia have a position on U.S.-Iran relations? I mean, Russia and Iran are considered allies in Syria, and the U.S. is doing its best under Trump to alienate Iran.
Yeah, so I mean, the whole Iran nuclear deal wouldn't have gone forward through the Obama administration without Russia's cooperation. Russia is obviously a very material ally of Iran in Syria, and that's not likely to change anytime soon. But of course, Russia still has an interest in keeping the deal and Iran not acquiring nuclear weapons. So as far as I can tell, Russia still would like to keep the deal, but it's very hard to know how to do that with the United States actively trying to sabotage it.
Well, Rahul, another big issue that was sort of attempted to be raised during the press conference by a journalist was the nuclear weapons ban treaty. There was a journalist who was credentialed by The Nation magazine, Sam Hussein. He works for the Institute for Public Accuracy, who held up an 8x10 sheet of paper that simply said nuclear weapon ban treaty, and was instantly and immediately physically removed from the premises as his fellow journalists watched on in horror. But no one is actually reporting on the issue that was on that sheet of paper, which is the nuclear weapons ban treaty. US and Russia, the two top nuclear powers in the world, have not signed the treaty that was passed last year. That, of course, I'm assuming just did not even make it onto the agenda of Putin and Trump, right?
Well, again, yeah, I mean, we have no idea what the agenda was, except for the occasional news article and this ridiculous press conference. But no, it's hard to imagine, you know, I mean, if it comes down to that, the United States and Soviet Union were signatories of the Non-Proliferation Treaty from inception, but the clauses in the NPT about what they call vertical proliferation as opposed to horizontal proliferation, which is to say about cutting the size of the arsenals of the actual nuclear powers, they never took that seriously. So yeah, of course, the United States and Russia are not planning to be bound by any kind of arms reduction treaties. And I mean, you know, in that context, remember, the United States does not ratify treaties anymore. And in fact, if the agreement with Iran had been set up as a treaty, there's no way Obama could have gotten it through Congress. The last time we ratified treaties meaningfully, we had what? We had NAFTA, we had GATT, we had the Chemical Weapons Convention in 1994, but ever since the contract with America and the new crop of Republican anti-internationalists, the United States doesn't do treaties, it doesn't do international law. Right now, Iran is bringing an action against the United States for breach of contract over the JCPOA with the International Court of Justice, but the United States withdrew from the ICJ in 1986 over a ruling against its terrorist war in Nicaragua. And since then, you can't get action against the United States and the ICJ. So yeah, no, don't expect any meaningful U.S. commitments to nuclear arms control.
Well, Rahul, I want to thank you so much for shedding light on all of the issues, well, at least several of the top issues that aren't getting much play in the media. And you mentioned that Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader, is requesting that Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, hold congressional hearings to find out exactly what U.S. policy is. It's amazing to me today that our own lawmakers don't really have a finger on the pulse of U.S. foreign policy and that it's all being done behind closed doors and on Trump's Twitter feed. So I'm sure we'll have you back on our program as always in the future. Thanks so much, Rahul.
Look forward to it, Sonali.
Rahul Mahajan is the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, as well as The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches sociology at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he is our U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent. We've been discussing all of the things that haven't been discussed in the media around U.S.-Russia relations in the wake of the Helsinki summit. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.